from his family in India and then adopted by an Australian couple. Dev Patel stars as the boy 25 years later who searches for his home using Google Earth. Lion features an all-star international cast and amazing photography to tell a remarkable journey. And Moonlight continues with a handful of late-night screenings. Barry Jenkins directs this film about race, sexuality, and identity through the eyes of a young black man growing up in Miami. For more information, current dates, and times, visit the Art Theater Co-op online at www.arttheater.coop/full-schedule. Disability Beat is sponsored in part by attorney Baku Patel of Patel Law, who practices Social Security disability law and represents those who have been denied benefits. There are no fees unless Patel Law wins your case. You can contact Patel Law for a free consultation to discuss your Social Security disability case. Patel Law is located at 108 West University Avenue in Urbana, with offices in Danville and Decatur. For more information, visit patellawteam.com or call 217-384-1111. And now stay tuned for Disability Beat.
Crisis Nursery. You're listening to Disability Beat on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM, community radio for East Central Illinois.
This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for a discussion with Kelly Branch Dirk, Central Illinois Care Services Coordinator for the ALS Association Greater Chicago Chapter. But first, disability news for the week of January 9th, 2017. Hate crime charges have been filed against four people shown in a Facebook video attacking a man with mental disabilities, cutting his scalp with a knife and punching him while yelling obscenities about Donald Trump and white people. Jordan Hill, age 18, of Carpentersville, Tesfaye Cooper, age 18, of Chicago, Brittany Covington, age 18, of Chicago, and Tanisha Covington, age 24, of Chicago, were charged with aggravated kidnapping, a hate crime, aggravated unlawful restraint, and aggravated battery with a deadly weapon. Hill was also charged with robbery, possession of a stolen motor vehicle, and residential burglary, while Cooper and Brittany Covington were charged with residential burglary. Sources said Hill attended the same school in the suburbs as the victim. The victim, an 18-year-old man reported missing by his parents in Crystal Lake this week, is shown crouching in a corner on a video carried on Facebook Live. His wrists are bound and his mouth is taped shut. As a woman shoots the video, two men cut the man's shirt with knives, then take turns punching him and stomping his head. One of the men cuts the victim's hair and scalp with a knife, and it appears the man is bleeding. The attackers on the video appear to be black and the man appears to be white, but though police declined at a news conference Wednesday evening to give the race of the attackers or the victim. Then the attack appears to have taken place on the west side. A police spokesman said investigators believe the man was targeted because he had special needs, not because he was white. But police and prosecutors still considered hate crime charges because of what was said on the video and because of the victim's disabilities. The man was found wandering the streets in shorts on Tuesday evening, police said. Investigators believe he may have been attacked at a home about a block east from where he was found. The four people taken into custody gave videotaped statements, according to police. Roger Ross Williams' feature-length documentary Life Animated will have its television premiere at 7 p.m. Saturday on the A&E Network, the documentary about a boy with autism who finds a way to communicate through Disney characters, has been shortlisted for this year's Academy Award nominations. Williams premiered Life Animated at the Sundance Film Festival, where he won the directing award for a documentary. Life Animated is one of 15 films chosen by the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences from 145 submitted in the documentary feature category to advance in voting for the Academy Awards ceremony. The documentary branch members will select 5 nominees from among the 15 nominations, and that will be announced on January 24th. Williams was inspired to shoot his new film after reading the book Life Animated, A Story of Sidekicks, Heroes, and Autism, written by Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Ron Suskind about his son. The book tells the story of Owen, who stopped speaking at age 3 and was diagnosed with autism. Owen eventually reconnected with the world through his love of Disney animated films. The film, which combines live footage and animation, opened in July after making the rounds of film festivals, where it racked up 11 awards and 12 nominations. Williams said he knew Ron Suskind for 15 years from when they both worked on the television show Nightline and met Owen as a child. When he read the book published in 2014, Williams and his producer, Julie Goldman, immediately optioned the documentary rights. The 89th Oscars will be televised live on February 26th on ABC. Families of children with special needs provide billions of dollars in unpaid medical care each year, researchers say, significantly compromising their own ability to earn a living. Data collected from more than 40,000 parents or guardians of those with special needs across the country suggests that about half of these kids, some 5.6 million children, need assistance at home with managing everything from feeding to breathing equipment and physical therapy. Mark Schuster is the chief of General Pediatrics at Boston Children's Hospital and a senior investigator on the study, which was published recently in the journal Pediatrics. According to Schuster, quote, "If parents did not provide the care at home, children would need to stay in the hospital longer, professionals would need to come to the home, or children might not get the care that their physicians prescribe. Parents want to do everything they can for their children, but it can be a real challenge to juggle their ill child, their other children, and sometimes their job," end quote. All told, families provide nearly $36 billion worth of care annually, the study found. On average, kids with special needs receive 5.1 hours of medical care from family members each week, but the figure grew to 11.2 hours weekly for those with an intellectual disability and 14.4 hours for those with cerebral palsy. Those estimates do not factor time families spend helping with daily activities like bathing and dressing, researchers said. The findings come from the analysis of data collected through the 2009-10 National Survey of Children with Special Health Care Needs. And finally, before leaving office, the Obama administration is releasing a flurry of guidance related to the rights of students with disabilities in the nation's schools. The U.S. Department of Education is weighing in on everything from restraint and seclusion to charter schools in a series of Dear Colleague letters and other resources distributed to educators just before the end of the year. In the correspondence, the agency outlines limitations on the use of restraint and seclusion in schools, warning that the practice could be discriminatory. A separate letter addresses the rights of those with disabilities applying to or attending charter schools and specifies that children retain their rights under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act, and Title II of the Americans with Disabilities Act in such environments. The guidance related to restraint and seclusion comes more than 4 years after the Education Department offered a 45-page resource document on the issue. At that time, disability advocates were disappointed that the agency did not issue official guidance. Sue Swenson of the Education Department's Office of Special Education and Rehabilitative Services issued the charter guidance jointly with the Office for Civil Rights. According to Swenson, quote, "It is critical to ensure that children with disabilities have access to a free, appropriate public education in charter schools. These guidance documents are designed to support states, local education agencies, and charter school personnel to understand their responsibilities under IDEA and Section 504. End quote. And that's the news for this week. Saying goodbye, saying goodbye, like it was the last time. You are tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. I'm Vicki Nicewander, joined today by my guest on the phone, Kelly Branch Dirks, who is the Central Illinois Care Services Coordinator for the ALS Association Greater Chicago Chapter. So I'm assuming, Kelly, that you just come down to Central Illinois every so often and check in with folks who are members of your organization. Is that why you're here today?
Yes, Vicki. Well, first of all, thanks for having me. The Greater Chicago Chapter is obviously based out of Chicago, but I'm actually housed in Central Illinois, and I cover the corridor, the 74 corridor, Iowa to Indiana, so that I can be more readily available to provide services to the people in Central Illinois.
Sounds like you have a pretty big area to cover.
I do, but fortunately I'm able to make it to the Champaign-Urbana area actually 3 or 4 times a month, and I can always come more often as needed.
Okay, well, you know, maybe, Kelly, what we should do first of all is for you to spend a couple of minutes talking about what ALS is. Now, I know that there are probably people out there listening who participated in the Ice Bucket Challenge about a year ago, and I know people who actually did that, but they still don't really know what ALS is all about.
Absolutely. Well, people are familiar with the acronym ALS, but not many people understand what those letters stand for. And it actually stands for amyotrophic lateral sclerosis. And it's a progressive neurodegenerative disease that affects nerve cells in the brain and the spinal cord. So the motor neurons in our brain reach from the brain to the spinal cord and from the spinal cord to our muscles throughout our body. But with ALS and the progressive degeneration of the disease, those motor neurons are actually killed. And when those motor neurons die, the ability of the brain to initiate and control muscle movement is lost. And with ALS, it affects the voluntary muscle action. So a person's ability to speak, to eat, to move, and to eventually breathe.
Oh, well, I wouldn't define breathing necessarily as a voluntary activity. So it's things that people actually put thought into doing, speaking and so forth, but it also can impact the involuntary, or am I just defining it wrong?
It actually only affects the voluntary movements and muscle control. And I understand where your confusion is, but when you think about taking a breath, we can choose to hold our breath, or we can choose to take a deep breath. And so that's why it's a voluntary muscle.
I see. Okay, so talk a little bit about how many people are out there in the population who have this disease, and do they know where it comes from?
Okay, absolutely. Well, first of all, there's 20,000 to 30,000 people in the United States diagnosed with ALS at any given time, and it vacillates a little bit. Of those cases, the average age of onset is 55, but generally between 40 to 70 years old is when we see an ALS diagnosis or symptoms start to develop. It's important to know, though, that it doesn't mean that only during that age group can you be diagnosed with ALS, because there are people in their 20s and 30s, as well as people in their 80s and 90s diagnosed with ALS. Now, there's two different types of ALS. One is called sporadic, and that's really the most common form of the disease in the United States. And 90 to 95% of the cases in the United States are of the sporadic type. So that means it can affect anyone, anywhere. And there's really no known reason for what causes ALS. So simply the people who will get the sporadic ALS are just that. There's no rhyme or reason for it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, 5 to 10% of people with ALS are diagnosed with something called familial ALS. And that's where it's inherited through a gene mutation from their family line.
Familial as in family?
Yep.
Okay.
In those families, there's a 50% chance that each offspring could inherit the gene mutation and may develop the disease. So now, you mentioned the Ice Bucket Challenge, and some of the funds that were derived from the Ice Bucket Challenge that were put into research has actually discovered an additional familial genome. A familial gene that researchers or the doctors can test for to see if a person carries that gene. Just because they carry the gene, though, doesn't necessarily mean the symptoms of ALS will surface.
Mm. Well, that could still be pretty scary for families and individuals who find that they are a carrier of that gene. And I'm sure there's worry about if they do have it, and even if they don't develop symptoms, that they will pass it on to children.
Absolutely. So some people choose to get tested and some people choose not to.
Mm-hmm.
Now, another interesting fact is that people who've been in the military, regardless if they participated during wartime or peacetime, are 2 to 3 times more likely to be diagnosed with ALS.
Say that again. Say that again.
People who've been in the military, regardless if their time served was during wartime or during peacetime, just being in the military makes them 2 to 3 times more likely to be diagnosed with ALS.
2 to 3 times. That's yep. Pretty amazing. And so I'm sure that's definitely something that they're looking at in research.
Absolutely. In fact, the Department of Defense is one of the largest researchers for looking for a cure and cause for ALS.
Wow. Wow.
You know, and that brings up another point regarding ALS. And what people often don't understand, there is no cure for ALS. A diagnosis of ALS is always a fatal diagnosis. Now, on average, people live 2 to 5 years from once they start showing symptoms of ALS, and some do live longer, but on average, it's about 2 to 5 years. And there's no medication to treat ALS. There is one medication that has been discovered, and it helps add life expectancy of around 2 to 4 months. But other than that, there's no treatment for ALS. And that's why it is so important for research to continue. We need to better understand this disease and be able to cure it.
Now, I'm sure there are people out there who know that the name often used for ALS is Lou Gehrig's disease. He was the first person who was diagnosed with this condition?
He was a famous baseball player, yes, that kind of brought light to the diagnosis of Lou Gehrig's disease, absolutely.
And have there been other famous people that listeners might have heard of who also have had or do have Lou Gehrig's disease or ALS?
Actually, there's quite a few people who have been in the public media. For those of people that are from Central Illinois and are familiar with Caterpillar, Mr. Ed Rapp announced his diagnosis last year. We also have Let's see, Senator Jacob Javits, actor David Niven, the Sesame Street creator John Stone, boxing champion Ezra Charles, NBA Hall of Famer basketball player George Yardley, famous golf caddy Bruce Edwards.
That seems like an awful lot. Just, I mean, that collection right there of people seems like it should bring more light to the disease itself.
And another kind of interesting one is that former Vice President Henry Wallace was also diagnosed. And then the big one is Steve Gleason, the football player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very interesting. So talk a little bit about, Kelly, about the services that the ALS Association provides to individuals down here.
Sure. Well, first of all, our services are provided through the care management program, and there's never a charge for any of the services that we provide to the patients. And so that's really important for people to understand. You know, they're being hit with so many medical bills, and to treat and take care of someone who has ALS, it costs about $250,000 a year. And so people are sometimes hesitant to reach out. So I really want to emphasize there's no cost for the services that we provide. And part of the services that we're able to provide are care service coordination, which we do actual home visits with the patient. We get them registered with the chapter. And then their care service coordinator will assist and provide them guidance through the disease process. And, of course, for the people in the Champaign-Urbana area, I would be the care service coordinator for them. In our home visits, we also kind of provide a consultation of maybe things that can be changed or improved or adapted in the home to improve comfort and quality of life. And we try to touch base with our patients about every quarter, so about every 3 months, just to make sure everything's going okay. We also offer virtual home visits for those who don't necessarily want someone to come into the home, but really want to have that contact with a care service coordinator. And then along with that, we're beginning February 1st, we're also going to be providing for our clientele 2 to 3 sessions with a licensed clinical social worker for the patients and caregivers who are struggling with coping with the diagnosis and making the adjustments. What we have found is that they can't get out to doctor's appointments or to therapy appointments, and the caregivers can't either because they're taking care of the loved one. So that's something that we're adding for 2017 to give them that additional emotional support.
Mm-hmm. Are there... Go ahead.
We also offer disease-specific education in services and training for any agency, any service that's interested in learning more. We have several specialized clinics up in the Chicago area that are ALS-specific that patients can go to. And then we also have an adaptive equipment lending closet where we have many of the big items that, you know, or have expensive copays or take time to access that we can loan out to patients, including power chairs, bathroom safety equipment, even hospital beds at times.
Does we talked about the prevalence and about, you know, the lifespan, the projected lifespan for people. What about the age of, you know, the people that this hit? Does this hit children as well as adults, or is it pretty much focused on adults?
No, the average age of onset is 55, with the average range being 40 to 70. But really it's, you know, the youngest cases, the upper teens, 18 or 19, on up. It does not. It has not affected children thus far.
And there have been no. What's the length? The longest length of time that is known of somebody who has lived with this disease. You say the range is 2 to 5 years. Is there somebody who's, you know, lived with it for 10 years? Say.
Yes, in fact, in the Central Illinois area, there's a gentleman who's had ALS for 29 years.
29 years.
So,
wow.
Yep. How? And I think it's important to remember that with equipment, you know, with a ventilator and feeding tube, people can live for an extended period of time, but that's part of the process of adjusting with this disease, mm-hmm. deciding how you want to live your life, what quality of life to you, and making sure the advanced directives are in place.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about the quality of life issue, because I know that there are people out there who would say, hey, if I got this disease, you know, just, you know, lock me up and put me away because I don't want to have to deal with that. But there are people who are living a pretty good quality of life, even though they're dealing with this disease. Is that not true?
That's true. You know, personal attitude has a lot to do with how you face anything in life. And there are some patients that really take a good perspective, and there's others that are really struggling with it. And our job as care service coordinators is to support them in what's important to them. Fortunately, in the Champaign-Urbana area, there is the Page Park Hill grant that is available to patients to help offset the cost of co-pays or some of the more expensive equipment that can help with quality of life. And that's part of what our care service job is to do, is to make sure that patients and families know the options and then help support them in whatever they decide.
And when do, I mean, how does a diagnosis happen? What are the things that people need to look for? What are the symptoms that happen that would encourage them to go to a doctor and get a diagnosis like this?
Well, another part of the unfortunate part of the disease, and we have so much work to do, is that there is no definitive test for ALS. Usually ALS is diagnosed after all other diseases have been ruled out.
Mm.
Now, symptoms start to show with maybe dropped foot, a weakness in a hand, a weakness in a leg, maybe difficulty swallowing, and then symptoms start to progress. And so it's those kind of symptoms that usually present them at the doctor. And then after a rule out of many other disease processes is when a diagnosis of ALS is made.
Well, that makes sense because a lot of other things are treatable where this one really is not.
Correct.
So where can people go to learn more about ALS? Is there does your organization have a website, or are there some resources out there that could be helpful?
Absolutely. People can go to www.alsachicago.org. And my phone number is 309-696-7184 if anyone has additional questions. And I also want to point out that September 16th, we will be having our first Walk to Defeat for ALS in the Champaign area, and we're hoping to have a lot of involvement and support from the community.
Great. Well, I hope you get a great attendance, and why don't you give your contact information one more time before we say goodbye, because I'm sure people are, you know, grabbing their pens and pencils to write that information down.
Absolutely. The website is www.alsachicago.org, and my phone number is 309-696-7184.
Thanks for joining me today, Kelly. It was very informative, and I'm sure that the listeners learned a lot. I know I did. Kelly Branch Dirks, Central Illinois Care Services Coordinator for the ALS Association Greater Chicago Chapter. Thanks again.
Thank you.
This and other episodes of Disability Beat are podcast on our website at www.disabilitybeat.com, or go to Facebook and look for Disability Beat Radio. Please send your comments and show ideas for guests or topics to disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Hope you have a great week. Yeah.